When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Still on a high after what was potentially, I think, not potentially, hands down, the greatest grappling event I've ever been to.
I'm coming back, man. I had a harsh come down after it was over. I'm like, oh my God, that was crazy. But watching all the matches over again, going through some of the stats, what a wild event, huh?
That's the best part, isn't it? You get to relive all those moments, the ones that maybe you missed because there's so much happening. You get to rewatch all those matches, right?
Yeah,
That's what I spent the last 2 days doing, because when we're there, we're focusing on one mat, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you hear the crowd go crazy and you look over and these guys are doing something. And then so I spent the last 2 days just going on arena and just rewatching everything that I missed.
It's so hard to keep track. You feel like you miss one mat here and then you go over to this mat and then you miss the mat you just left. It's like, oh my God.
All I can say is thank goodness for Arena, because that is awesome. Arena.flowgrappling.com. It's where all the brackets for ADCC are. You can go back and you can look at every single bracket for every division and you can see how they played out. And every match on that bracket has a link to go through and to watch the video. So it not only tells you exactly who won and how, but it also has even like the points at the timestamps when they were scored as well, which makes it really good for going back and kind of seeing how those matches actually, what they look like, right?
Well, we can play this little highlight that we got.
Roll it.
Long too. So you can see some of the action that you missed out there.
Ah, yes, a wholesome moment here.
It's a big tournament, man. You know, and this one is different.
You know, the production quality of this was just roaring and like, out of this world, that right? Look at that. Like, you got the smoke. You got drummers.
For everyone, for all you guys.
Very happy.
You've been the haters.
Battle.
It's for you guys. This. So take this as a lesson.
Shout out to Seth and
keep training. Keep riding. Keep believing, and you will achieve.
People's champ,
yeah,
right
yeah,
there,
Lachlan,
superstar,
stole the weekend, man.
He really did, yeah. Right? Man, like what a guy! Like let's just remind people, right? We were talking about this in the office right yesterday. We're looking back through the years of ADCC results, and Lachlan Giles, 77-kilogram guy, goes in, taps his way through to a third place finish in the absolute division, and he was the lightest guy to make it to the absolute podium since 2007. That is
Marcelo Garcia.
Another legend, Marcelo Garcia. That's pretty good company.
Well, in 2007,
Giles actually, and Marcelo Garcia.
You know what's interesting is there were 277 guys on the podium in 2007. It was Marcelo Garcia took second, and Andre Galvao, who was 77 those back then, he took third. That's wild.
It's insane that Galvao was 77 back then.
Yeah.
That's definitely hard to imagine.
His traps are like 50 pounds now.
And speaking of Galvao, man, you know what? We're jumping around.
Yeah,
here.
Let's talk dial about it. Let's talk about it for a second, then, because man, I think we got to spend just a minute. I mean, you know, a lot of big storylines coming out of this tournament. Of course, Gordon Ryan. You know, but I feel like none have to be bigger than the story of Lachlan Giles.
He stole the show.
He absolutely stole the show. He you know, it's what jiu-jitsu is made of. It's like why we watch ADCC. You know, it was all the things that you know you love about this sport, and love about this tournament wrapped up into one clean storyline for all of us to digest. It was just an incredible performance.
We have got a good question here actually in the live chat. Okay, putting you guys on the spot, what do you think was the biggest surprise? Blue belt Nick Rodriguez making it through to the finals or Lachlan Giles tapping out three of the physically most imposing competitors in the
game?
It's
got to be Lachlan Giles.
Hands down. I mean,
got to be, right?
We've seen a lot of, I think it's the craziest thing I've seen in a jiu-jitsu tournament or a grappling tournament in general. Like, we've seen a lot of upsets, right? You've never seen somebody do that three times in the same bracket, like in that fashion.
We can roll a couple clips of
with
Lachlan
submission
too,
wins
while
too.
We're talking.
Yeah. You know
here,
I mean?
Maybe.
Submission wins. He's not eking out points wins. He's finishing these beasts.
He tapped the 99-kilogram champ in the first round.
Right.
And then he taps Gaugio and Ali, who are who are both 50 pounds heavier than monsters, you know, superstars in the grappling world. And the crazy thing is every after Kynan, everybody knew what was coming, right? The entire arena is watching, thinking, is he going to get a 50-50 heel hook? And he works his way there.
All right, so, yeah, I got a little story about what happened. And here is that first heel hook. Bit.
Lachlan versus Kynan.
Oh, this look at that.
First round, man. Nobody was picking this, right?
Nobody.
Surgically precise.
You'd have to be crazy to have picked that. I mean, look at the
crowd going wild. Like, they loved it.
Yeah, yeah. You look at that bracket, it's like, okay, this is an easy one for Kynan. 99-kilogram exactly. Champ versus a guy who went 0-1 at 77. But
so I got a little story about this, because while you guys were running around with cameras and stuff, I was doing commentary all weekend. And luckily, kind of like during a couple of matches when they all went down to one mat, I was able to kind of take a break and kind of actually watch for a little while rather than just call the action. And I was sat over on the side of the one mat, and Patrick Gaudio.
Here's
there's the Ali tap.
Yeah. Versus Ali.
And this was the bronze medal match in the absolute. So
you're talking right after this match.
Gaudio was the nastiest one.
I'm going to go back a little bit, because it was Gaudio went in, okay, and Gaudio lost to Lachlan Giles. And then he came out, and man, his knee was messed up. He had like ice on his knee. His ankle was popped. He actually was sat there, and he asked me to translate with him with the medic as well. And he was explaining to the medic, he couldn't feel his knee. He couldn't feel his foot. Right?
Yeah, he had ice on both, on his foot and his knee.
And he was mad, man. He was furious. You know, just the fact that he got caught and stuff, you know, the little guy. So Gaudio sat there, and he's been training with Ali at Fight Sports in Miami, right? And those guys, you know, Ali is like, okay, he's going to go through into the bronze medal match after losing Buchecha. And they're talking to each other, and, you know, it's kind of clear because Gaudio's like mad, and Ali's like got his game face on, and he's like, don't worry, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to smash this guy and stuff. And then, like, Gaudio's like, yeah, you better, you know. So he goes out there, gets tapped in, like, a minute, and then, like, you know, brutal heel hook, comes back. And there's this moment where Gaudio and Muhammad, they both sat there with the medics attending to them, both put ice on their knees at exactly the same moment.
Just commiserating together.
And they both, like, their faces are just dark and full of thunder, and they just look at each other, and they just go... They just start laughing because of the ridiculousness, the absurdity of it. It was insane. It's one of the funniest moments of the entire tournament.
An instant ADCC legend, that Lachlan Giles, man.
Who could forget that?
He told me in that post tournament interview that he was hoping to just earn an invite back by entering the absolute. He said, "Hey, they told me if I do the absolute, I'm more likely to be invited back."
I mean, I think
he's earned it.
They better invite him back, right? Yeah.
No, he's guaranteed now. But yeah, he's like, I was just hoping to go out there and look good, and then they'd invite me back next time.
Well, hopefully as well, he gets a better seed as well, because he came into the 77-kilogram division. This is actually Lachlan's third ADCC appearance, because he's won the trials a bunch of times, right? And he had a rough draw. He had Lucas Lepre first round, but it wasn't just because of the seeding. It's if the rumor is correct, he actually asked for Lucas first round.
Yeah, Lucas hit one of the slickest back takes of the whole tournament on him too. That was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we're talking a lot about wrestling versus jiu-jitsu and stuff like that coming out of this tournament, right? But I mean, I think Lachlan just proved how effective, you know, technical jiu-jitsu is. You're never going to see like a lighter guy like a Dayton Fix or whatever go up and wrestle a Kyle Snyder and beat a Kyle Snyder. It's just not going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
But in jiu-jitsu, you know, the technique really does bridge those gaps.
Technique conquers everything. Right? Yeah. I know the other thing about that moment with Gaudio and Ali as well that was hilarious was that, I mean, the post-event stuff about when, like, Gaudio posts on his Instagram is, like, a photo of him, Kynan, and Ali together. And there's, like, sending a little hug to Australia. And then, like, Ali is saying that, oh, man, like, tagging Patrick, like, we need to buy this guy's DVD. It's like...
It's awesome. It's great sportsmanship.
Absolutely. It really
Lachlan
is.
Had, right? Lachlan had JT first in 2017, too. So he's had some really bad seeds. So
that's right.
He had Durinho first round 2015.
Yeah, he's had.
Oh wow.
Nothing but a bottom seed. No respect for the Oceania Travel winner.
let's talk about that absolute division though, because there are so many submissions in that bracket. The most out of any other bracket. There are 12, I want to say, if I remember that correctly. Why? I'm racking my brains here. Why
was it seven of the eight first round matches?
Seven matches out of the eight first rounds were finishes. And so you're just sitting there watching.
It was all leg locks right off the bat.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, the most heel hooks came from that division.
And then Spriggs got a guillotine in the first round there, too.
Exactly.
One of the most savage guillotines of the tournament.
Tex got a foot lock. Yeah. Spriggs had a guillotine. And I want to say probably all the other first round subs were heel hooks, right?
Yeah. And
Gary on Edwin.
I mean, ankle lock. Oh, such a brutal thing.
My guess for why there were so many is that these guys were pretty dialed in their own divisions, doing a lot of homework, a lot of studying, and they didn't probably think to watch a whole lot of other tape or do any other study. And they just got a look they weren't used to and got caught. But I don't know what else was going on.
But leg locks weren't really a dominant theme up until that point.
Yeah, exactly. Up until that point at all.
Yeah, you didn't see him at all.
That's what I talked about in the video I did with Reed, that me and Sean Williams, right before the Absolute, were talking, like, in the little intermission, like, hey, man, not that many leg locks this year. Like, a lot of, you know, other stuff, guillotines or whatever. And then I ate my words when it comes out of the Absolute, and it's like five heel hooks in the first round.
Yeah. I feel like, it's called the Absolute Division, right? But you could almost call it, like, the Redemption Division, you know? That's, like, that is these guys. Lachlan is a perfect example. You know, I mean, when I went back there and I saw Muhammad Ali warming up, he was like, man, I went out first round. This is my shot. I saw Keith Krikorian warming up back there, taking it very seriously, you know? And these guys were... You know, like Lachlan said, they're trying to impress people, and they had a disappointing showing the first day, and that second day, this is the day to seize the day, right? They had nothing to lose. These guys were just gonna go out there, balls to the wall, and they did. And I think that's probably maybe why you saw some of those submissions too.
It's
that's
a long 2 years for the next
exactly
ADCC,
right. You only get one shot.
That's something cool that ADCC does, because most Absolute divisions that you see is only guys who make the podium.
Right.
ADCC, like, half the guys are guys who went out first round that they're letting get another shot. Like, if it was only podium guys, Lachlan wouldn't be there, right?
Yeah.
And then you get Lachlan goes out there 0-1. I mean, great move by him. He could have went home 0-1. He's a little guy. He did the Absolute. Now he's a legend, and he's just selling out, I think, more than he does in his weight class. You know, he's going out there, he's like, I got Kynan, what do I got to lose?
It's like being the ultimate wild card, right? You know, you get that shot, you can go in, and you're looking at the bracket as well. I think the bracket was really interesting because there were only two champions actually in the Absolute division, and that was Gordon and Kynan. And of course, Gordon, we saw, he just was on cruise control for the entire weekend, right? He just walked through it and stuff. But you look at Kynan, I mean, nobody would have imagined that Kynan, after that incredible performance of beating Yuri Samoys, of beating Buchecha, and then beating the wild horse himself, you know, this animal Nick Rodriguez. He tamed the bucking bronco, right?
Yeah, and then tapped in three minutes by Lachlan.
Yeah, there you go. Out, first round, shocker. And this is after Kynan had already showed in previous events, like Kasai and so on, that heel hooks are not a mystery to him, right? Mm. I mean, he hit that beautiful back take on Craig Jones at Kasai Pro earlier this year that was like, you know, the kind of heel hook, the defense that Felipe had shown against Gordon a few years ago. So for him to get tapped by a guy who he outweighed by 25 kilos or something, that's crazy.
I think looking at when I was rewatching Lachlan's leg locks, like, you see how scared guys are of Gordon, right? When Gordon gets on the leg. I don't think at first they weren't respecting Lachlan being in there on their legs as much as, like, when Gordon starts going for it.
Especially with the size difference.
Yeah, size difference. They might not even know much about Lachlan. When Gordon gets in on there, they run for their lives. They try and get out of there immediately. They kind of seemed a little bit more comfortable in there with Lachlan, and then, you know.
It was over.
Yeah. So, moral of the story, don't get into a leg lock shootout with Lachlan Giles.
For real.
Any Australian.
Don't get in a leg lock shootout with any Australian.
Australia.
We should play this real quick. How about this one before we move on from the Absolute Division? One of my favorite clips from the Absolute Division is this Gary versus Edwin.
How vicious.
Flying heel hook we got right here. Look at this one.
Oh, Kenny Bassani.
I think Edwin was ready to sell out as well, but he got the raw end of the stick.
Man,
you know?
It's a clever counter to Edwin's stand-up style, right? Edwin doesn't wrestle like normal people. He stands up straight and baits the shot.
Yeah, he wants you to shoot in, right?
He Gary, wants to go for that Darce choke, but Gary said, I'll just do this instead.
Gary was on point. I feel like we could talk about Gary all day, but his stuff he was firing off was just hitting this week. His takedowns, his submissions.
For me, that right there, that Kenny Bassani into the flying heel hook and stuff. Obviously, it's kind of the
Kenny Bassani.
Kenny Bassani is the big Japanese for
that's
flying
the proper term for it.
He doesn't know what that means.
Delicious snack.
I just repeat what Sean Williams told me. So. But, you know, I mean, that was like the grappling equivalent of a one-punch knockout, right? It was just like walking out there and
how
getting cold-clocked.
It was like 15 seconds.
18 seconds.
Officially, it was recorded as 18, but, I mean, I was there and I counted on the clock and it was like 14 and a half seconds. It was just like straight out there, bang, done. But Gary came back after a two-year layoff from grappling tournament. You know, he's been focused on MMA that entire time. And there is no exaggeration to say that he had a career best performance.
Looked better than ever, for sure.
Right?
This is his fourth time. He's never made the podium until now.
Took the bronze, and he looked great.
So fun.
Do you remember? Remember in 2017, Chase? I feel like there was just like a renewed focus from Gary too. Mm. You remember the Wagner Gary match?
Oh, he didn't really care.
It
that
was
match.
A little. It was yeah. a little playful, right?
And that was the bronze medal match.
Yeah, it was. But this time, it felt like he wasn't playing around with any of these guys. He had like a renewed focus.
I felt that was the case all weekend. Like, you know, like we saw Gary, and of course, he was all dressed up as usual. He loves the outlandish costumes and stuff. But Gary's a happy-go-lucky kind of guy, right? And, you know, he's always playing around and joking and stuff. Even bumping into him in the hotel and at the weigh-ins and stuff, there was no messing. He was really kind of like subdued, quiet, serious. That's not the Gary Tonon we're used to seeing, right?
I just think, you know, Gary's so open with this game that we were talking about this before ADC, like, could he be affected by not doing pure grappling and doing strictly MMA? But I think we all agreed that the fact that he's just creative and just doing unusual things, it would actually be almost benefit him to be away. And I think it showed. Like, his wrestling was phenomenal. The best wrestling, I think, at the tournament. And,
JT, I would say.
Yeah,
JT.
I don't know about that.
True. JT did
take
wrestling, though.
JT did take Gary down, too.
Yeah, that's true. All right, fine.
I know what you're saying. It was very impressive.
It was just fun. Yeah, it was. Gary's so fun to watch. He's an entertainer.
If you made a top 10 most exciting matches from the weekend, all of Gary's matches are probably going to be in there.
Yeah. Well, what was the most exciting one that everybody's talking about was him versus Renato Canuto. Are you guys in agreement that that was the wildest match?
Yeah, there were some wild matches, though.
That was the most exciting 0-0 match in the history of grappling, for sure. It was insane how many times they were close to getting something, and they're both like a spring. They're just bouncing back out of it. Yeah,
yeah. And then it got so deep in the match that they were just like, try something. Yeah, and they were just both just like trying things and just kind of like letting each other like be offensive, because it was just like crazy scrambles, like one after the other.
It was like watching cats fighting. It was just like just this ball, like a cartoon ball, like rolling around the mat.
Like Hanato's Gary's dark twin. They're very different in the way they execute moves, but they have the same sort of approach, I believe.
How bad do you want to see them run that for a rubber match now? They're 1-1 against each other. Man, I'll watch that anywhere. We need a super fight of those two.
Right. I know Gary said he wants it. And I think
I'm sure Hanato does too at this
point. Yeah, Hanato wants it. Yeah. Anytime those two guys fight, you know, make sure there's a camera.
I have a question actually in the comments right here. Is that who had the fastest submission? Was it Gary or was it Tex? It was Gary. It was definitely Gary. I think Texas submission was around about 30 seconds. It was actually
John Blank there in the absolute.
Yeah, like 20 something, but it
27
was,
for Tex.
27 seconds for Tex for the straight foot lock against John.
And had a
50 Blank.
Second submission.
His first round.
Sub 1 minute submissions this time around. Jeez.
I'm gonna go around the table and I'm gonna ask you guys then. So, the most memorable, most exciting, just the standout match for you at ADCC 2019, regardless of division, absolute weight division, whatever. Chase, kick us off.
Whew, thank goodness. Didn't start with me.
Give you time.
My mind's reeling, and I'm going to pick one that might be a little bit off the radar because there were so many bombastic wild matches. But to me, when Dante Leon took Lucas Lepre's back, my mouth was just, my jaw was on the floor.
Right.
That was the wildest thing, because it's like, okay, Lepre's probably going to win that match and be in prime position there to meet Wagner in the semi. Yeah, no offense to Dante. He's had a great year, but Lucas Lepre is Lucas Lepre. And he took his back, man. Took his back and won that match. And with time left, I think he had 3 minutes on the back or something.
He's on the back forever, yeah.
Yeah, so that was just incredible to me, and a huge testament to Dante's incredible year. You know, he's had a phenomenal year with a lot of success in the no-gi department. He's poised for great things. So to me, that really stood out.
I said that about Dante going into ADCC, that I felt that he had the kind of style that would work really well for ADCC, because he's physically very, very strong. He's deceptively technical from bottom. He's got this great guard game and stuff, and he can wrestle up. And that's exactly how he scored on Lucas.
That's how all the back takes were coming. When I went through and did watch all the points yesterday, most of the back takes were coming up from a single leg from the guard or something, and then they're defending, and you're jumping on the back.
There you go.
I was watching the Hanato Gary was at the same time as that one, and everybody was over watching that one, and then somebody, I think Gordon's like, oh man, Dante's about to beat Lucas, and everybody stands, you know, it was shocking to watch, look over and see him on his back.
Mike, your most standout match from the tournament?
I'm not going to say match, I'm going to say division. Women's under 60 was just,
was pure fire.
It was a buzzsaw. I mean, first, Fionn, I mean, Bia Mesquita has always stomped Fionn. She's always beat her up.
She had her number, right?
And Fionn comes out and breaks. I mean, I didn't even get to see these matches live. I was working backstage interviewing, and it was just like I was just hearing the crowd roar, and then like a girl like
what
getting carried back crying. So, that's
what,
and I was like, what is
going on? I'm laughing, but you know, we talked about how ADCC is a brutal tournament, and there were some brutal moments.
I was just like, what
division
is going on out there? You know, you see Bia coming back holding her arm at the ice, and then Fionn and Bianca Bazzilla. So first, Fionn. basically, I don't know the what happened medically, but it looked like she broke Bea Mesquita's arm.
It was way past was the point of, like, it was like, it was back here. So it was way past 180, and then there was a little bit of a twist added in as well. I don't know if it was a dislocation or
And then Fionn, I mean, this division is hard for me to watch, too, because those girls are three of the nicest people in jiu-jitsu.
Right.
I love them all. But, and then Fionn, after the biggest win of her career, you know, goes out there against Bianca Basilio, and Bianca Basilio looked like she broke Fionn's leg. I mean, maybe for a second time this year. Bianca Basilio with that vicious toe hold in the final.
Yeah, that was really nasty. I think that was a huge strategic error by Fionn, because we know how good Bianca's leg locks are. She tapped out Fionn at the Worlds this year, right?
Well, she got a straight ankle, yeah.
At Worlds. Yeah, and this time it was a toe hold, but it was in that shootout, in that leg lock position. And, I mean, Bianca just ripped it off.
It was the type of toe hold where it wasn't like you're putting the toes in the butt. The leg was straight. And those ones, a lot of times, can result in some vicious injuries, for sure.
For sure. Reed, standout match, please, if you will.
You know, I think it was a wild weekend, so many big moments. But I think where I was, like, the most excited, or where I was, like, just the most hype was right before Andre versus Felipe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think just the buzz in that building while they played the video and while those guys were walking out, and Felipe was screaming, and then Andre was staring Felipe down. Man, I, like, could not contain myself how excited I was, to be honest. You know, and
They're banging on the drums.
Man. It was just like the place was absolutely electric at that moment.
You were the guy who was really responsible for making this happen, because you flew to San Diego and you flew to Brazil to film and to meet both Andre and Felipe in the run up to this.
How serious those guys were taking it.
But well, you were part of the team that created that amazing kind of like the promo video that actually played on the big screens in the venue. And right. When that video played, that 60-second little video, I mean, I got goosebumps, but the reaction from the crowd as well was... It was the most anticipated moment of the entire weekend, right? Yeah. No exaggeration.
And just hearing the announcer say, the biggest ADCC super fight of all time.
The announcer
biggest,
was on point, too.
Yeah, he was good. The biggest grudge match. You know, I know how much it meant to Felipe. I know how much it meant to Andre. You know, I knew that these guys weren't going to give an inch. And I just, like, was jumping out of my chair. I, like, so excited. I could not wait for
it. Do we have a clip to play for this?
Oh, yes, we do. Actually, not from this match.
Okay,
Maybe in a second here. But, I mean, I thought the match delivered. You know,
absolutely. What do you guys think? Do you guys think Alval broke him with his pace? It seemed like it to me.
100%.
Absolutely. Yeah, like at one point when they went out of bounds, it was like Felipe didn't want to get... I think you saw a little reaction, too, when Alval was coming out clubbing him, and Felipe's like, oh, wow, this is...
So the first 10 seconds of that match looked like an old school pancrase bout because it was like straight up open hand slaps. Now, we've seen videos of Galvao training like this with Josh Hinger at Atos, right? They're just beating the crap out of each other in the stand up, like clubbing each other. And Galvao came out of the gates like immediately in the first 15 seconds. He immediately had Penner on the back foot. He was chasing him across the mat, and just the look on Felipe's eyes, I genuinely think that he wasn't prepared for it.
After the takedown out of bounds too, it was like Alval was back in the center and Felipe is like still laying on the ground. It was like right there I was like, I don't think he's coming back.
I mean, he hit that table pretty hard.
He wasn't the only guy to do that all weekend, right? There were a few of those incidents. Maybe a case for bringing the tables back away from the mat a little, or making the mat even bigger. But I mean, luckily, nobody was seriously hurt from that. Yuri Samoyes is a slightly different matter. He tweaked his knee kind of going out of bounds. But just to speak about that, it's like the Galvao was just relentless. Like, he didn't give Felipe time to breathe. He was constantly in his face, constantly pushing him. And, well, I mean, how many takedowns did he score? I don't remember.
Two points.
How many takedowns did he hit?
I think there were like three good sequences. Andre had a perfect strategy. Like, he didn't take a shot for almost 5 minutes. He was just pulling on his head, making him tired, wearing him out. And it seemed like Felipe was dazed. And then he just, bam, hit a blast double.
That's the thing. Once he gets on the bottom, too, like, how are you going to sweep Andre Galvao there? It's going to be so tough to put him on his back and hold him for 3 seconds, whatever you got to do to sweep. At that point, I didn't really like Felipe's chances once I saw it.
Yeah, I thought definitely, you know, a lot of good competitors. I think you got to give it up to what Gordon did out there. He didn't make it look easy. But in terms of, like, who looked the most prepared, it looked like Andre was prepared for anything. You know?
And it was his birthday, 37th birthday as well, man.
Speaking of those two, I'm getting a lot of hate in the DMs online for ranking Gordon ahead of Galvao. What do you guys think about my choice there?
I don't think it's the GOAT list. See, if we're talking greatest of all time, maybe I put Andre ahead. But we're talking season, Gordon did double gold, two brackets.
And Nogi Worlds, feel, too. We still ranking his Nogi Worlds double
gold. I don't
gold.
Feel that he won super fight.
That weighs eight wins.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not just that, because Gordon has consistently been winning, as you say. Nogi Worlds last year, super fight against Joao Gabriel, you know, his recent performances. You have to take that into consideration. And six submissions out of eight matches, beating guys like Buchecha, beating guys, you know, just like just a host of really, really talented, tough guys, I think absolutely earns Gordon that number one spot.
Who can say, right? Who can say, you know, I think, you know,
we can say. Look at the
Andre is the, you know, he is the most senior. He's defending the super fight. So, I mean, I think you could say that he's got a claim to it until Gordon beats Andre. You know,
I think Andre's GOAT at this point.
To hook up Andre,
well,
though.
Well, in terms of, like, legend status, ADCC, I mean, like, that just further cements Galvao's position for me.
Yeah,
right?
But it's not
I
a ranking for your career.
Exactly. Not career ranking.
To help out Andre, though. That was the only division I didn't go straight podium from ADCC. I was like, I cannot put Andre Galvao in fifth after the first, second, third, fourth.
But we want to find out who the best is. We got this little clip right here we can play, Andre versus Gordon, and we want to know who the best is.
Oh my word.
What do you guys think?
We can
Andre
see
Andre coming
it?
Back? Andre going to come back?
Look at this. Come Says on. He this is, was right? so hype. These
I
guys.
Say, all right. So when Galvao beat Penna, I was right next to Angelica Galvao and all the rest of the Atos guys. And I turned around to Angelica and I was like, is he going to come back? Is he going to come back? And she's like, yeah, I don't think so.
No,
you know?
Of course he's going to come back.
No,
come
she's like, anything can happen, but I really don't think so. I really think he's done. And then literally 2 seconds later, Galvao's out in the middle of the mat facing off with Gordon. And I'm just like, what is happening here? This is incredible.
He's been chatting too with Gordon online a little bit, going back and forth on Instagram.
Okay,
the
well,
hype
I'm
is real.
Something right now. I feel that Galvao kind of has to, in a way, because he is the one who put the stipulation to Gordon. He said, hey, Gordon, you've wanted this match for however long, like 3 years or something. You know, you've been chasing after me. You've been calling me out. You've been talking a load of crap online. Here's the deal. He said it straight. Go and win ADCC gold absolute.
Yeah.
Then
earn your shot.
In a couple of years, you and me.
Said that a bunch of times. I've seen that a bunch of times from him and Angelica about Gordon.
So
Gordon Wynn did it.
There was the talk that it was going to be, you know, Galvao's last match. There's the talk that, you know, that he's going to retire out in a high. And even Gordon himself said that, you know, if that is the case, if Galvao wants to retire, he actually doesn't have a problem with that, because he would love to see somebody go out, you know, with their legacy intact. And I don't think anybody would disagree that that's a cool
100%.
Thing, right?
Where's the super fight go from there?
Huge but, okay? That is by far the one match that we really, really, everybody undeniably wants to see more than any other, because it's the one match that where else is that ever going to happen, right?
Yeah, it's fair. Running out of time
imagine,
for it.
Could you imagine 2021 Andre versus Gordon to really solidify who is the top of the pound for pound ranking?
Yeah, it's gotta wait 2 years.
Yeah, but like,
I think the fans would agree.
We don't have many more from Galvao. That's why I sort of felt bad for Pergisa there, because that's like one of the big rivalries of his career, and he's not gonna have a chance to run it back. Like, that was his last shot, and Galvao took it.
That's sports, baby. Yep. Yeah, got a couple key players in the comments here. Shout out to Mo. And Josh Hinger just said he's got an entire highlight of Galvao and himself clubbing each other. Should
I
post
bet.
That thing. I want to see it.
Years of highlights, I bet.
I got to say, shout out to Mo as well for putting on literally the best ADCC in living memory. I just think that's
The stuff that those guys were able to pull off, Seth. Right.
Best grappling event ever. It was like you were at WrestleMania or the Super Bowl or something. Just
goodness.
The feeling, the electricity in the air around the Hilton where we were staying, it was like, it was.
I mean, I think it's not by accident that it was the most exciting. You know, I think just the from the audience, you know, the crowd, the way that they were participating and the production and the spectacle that was on, it elevated, I think, everybody's performance.
For me, it's ADCC as it really deserved to be. Because ADCC, the most prestigious no-gi championship in the world, the most respected of titles in the no-gi landscape. And, you know, it's not always been treated maybe as it could have, right? Some of the locations that it went to, some of the you know, the kind of the situations with the actual organization around the tournaments has been up and down, right? But I got to say, the last couple of years, you know, Finland was incredible. 2017, 2019 in LA was phenomenal. For me, that signals a trend in, you know, a move in the right direction.
How
I think 2021 is going to be.
How are they going to top 2021?
The SoCal fans really made it special too. The SoCal fans really know their jiu-jitsu compared to a lot of regions, and having them there, they know when a big sweep's coming. You know, it really helped.
And they know the magnitude of what these things mean.
They really do, right? They were they're educated fans, and they were, like you say, Mike, they were predicting, you know.
They knew what's coming, yeah.
Yeah, they could see things coming. You could hear them kind of go, oh, it's coming. It's, you know, the right reactions at the right time.
They helped clue me in. You know, I'm shooting photos. I'm kind of dialed in on one mat. I hear some crazy stuff happen to the right. I got to turn. I got to swivel, follow the crowd.
Yeah. Okay, so we discussed there a little bit about the standout matches. You know, we discuss obviously Lachlan Giles,
what
People's
was yours?
Champion.
You didn't pick yours, yeah.
Oh, okay, I got one. I got a good one actually, and I really enjoyed this match. It was one of the ones that I commentated on, and I think it's maybe a sleeper match, and I really suggest people go back and check this one out, just because it was really, really entertaining and technically very interesting. It was Craig Jones versus Mason Fowler.
Mm.
Sleeper match. It was like second round in the 88-kilogram division. Mason Fowler is as tough as they come, right? He's only a brown belt, okay? And this guy training with Kyle Terra, he's got a ton of MMA and wrestling experience, and he's really been sharpening his jiu-jitsu game. And Craig was on fire, right? And, you know, Craig has been criticized in the past as being very one-dimensional with his leg locks. He showed a little bit of everything in the tournament, but even in that match, he was cycling through the, let's call them, the Danaher systems, the front headlock system, the back system, the Kimura system. It was a little bit of everything, and Mason was just, you know, he was getting stuck in. It was a kind of a little bit knockdown drag out, and then, you know, Craig hits his beautiful guillotine. Fantastic match. So one of those ones that maybe gets slept on because it was like an earlier round match and stuff. But
Mason did have a great performance, and a lot of these guys did who maybe went 1-1 at the tournament, or even these guys like Craig who you know didn't win the gold. But I mean, there's so many great performances that we're not even talking
something
about.
Something that none of us mentioned that I think deserves honorable mention for story of the tournament, like what we're talking about, is Ruotolo.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. The youngest competitor to ever make it that far in ADCC.
And then made it to the semis and then went the distance with Paulo Miao. He's a juvenile blue belt?
Yeah.
16-year-old?
It's incredible. I mean,
every one of his matches.
That kid can't even get his purple belt yet.
He's not going to laugh. Yeah, he took it to Paulo, man. That knee bar photo has been all over the internet.
What was it Danaher said to you about the belts, Reed?
That they died. I forget what did he say. They used to mean something.
To paraphrase, it's like basically they don't mean that much anymore because you have like purple belt Nicky Ryan, you know, beating the black belt IBJJF champion in Jameel Hill and making it into the division.
Nick Rodriguez,
purple belt, can't even get his brand. And then there you go, getting his purple belt on the podium.
There was two blue belts in the ADCC semifinals. If you think about it, Ty and Nick Rodriguez.
Wow, that's right. Yeah, like fighting for the podium spot.
I feel like we got a Nicky Rod clip here. I feel like I should tell this story because it's kind of a funny story. But that morning of after he had already beaten Muhammad Ali and Orlando Sanchez, ADCC world champion, IBJJF world champion, Nicky Rod's coach came up to me that morning and said, "Hey, do you know where I can find a purple belt? Do you know where I can get a purple belt? I want to promote Nicky to purple belt today." And I said, "Is he ready? Really? Come on.
Are you sure, Jay? Really?
How long
sure
has he had his belt?"
"Is this IBJJF legal?" But I said, "Well, man," I was like, "Well, I brought my purple belt, you know." And so we had another one of the guys who was working with us run back to my room, grab my purple belt so we could put the purple belt there, so Jay could promote Nicky to purple belt on the podium, standing next to Kynan and Bushesha, you know, two black belt world champions, two of the greatest, especially Bushesha, one of the greatest. Here's a little clip of this one of these matches. And this is Nicky's first match.
This is the first round match.
The last
right?
5 seconds of the match here, he hits this insane.
This basically won the match for him. I think it could have gone to Muhammad if that moment didn't happen.
Yeah,
here.
That fireman's won it for him.
Yeah, it was a very even match. I was calling that one with Sean Williams, my commentator partner for the weekend, and when those guys came on, they did you see them land on the photographers like twice? Yeah.
This right was the first match of day one. Yeah, yeah. This is like the first match.
If you want to make a match that's going to land on the photographers, it's Nick Rodriguez versus Muhammad Ali.
It's like 500 pounds of men.
There's Jay right there, his coach, who promoted him to purple belt at the end of the second day.
Jay Rigoboto, right?
Yeah.
Really cool guy.
Shout out to those guys down in South Jersey, man. Making killers.
Doing work.
Dude, what is it about Jersey?
Yeah, Jersey's content gold, man.
Mikey Lusameshi? Now Nick Rodriguez, Gary Tonin, Gordon Ryan.
One of the wrestling guys calls it the Dagestan of USA.
I mean, that's like perfect.
So right? I can't argue with the results, man.
For real,
gotta give
right
a shout out to Muhammad.
JT Torres also.
JT, a bunch of strong guys. But I was just saying, Muhammad's wrestling and counter wrestling look really good. I thought maybe he'd pull guard, you know, because he wouldn't be penalized in the first half of the round. But he took it to Nick and stood and traded with him on the feet for that entire round.
Bold move.
Looked pretty solid. So. He's working his wrestling. Nice work out there.
You know, we got an interesting comment actually from Hinger, Josh Hinger, in the live chat here, saying about how the belt system belongs to jiu-jitsu, but in his opinion, ADCC is not jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it's not.
And it is an interesting point because they themselves call it submission fighting. Submission fighting, meaning that it doesn't matter if you're a wrestler, if you're a judo guy, if you're an MMA fighter, sumo, jiu-jitsu, it does not matter. That it's the kind of always was designed as the kind of the proving grounds where your grappling style could go head to head with others. And it just happens to be that jiu-jitsu has always been the most dominant, right? But there have been other stylists who have enjoyed a lot of success in ADCC throughout the history. We're talking about wrestlers like Mark Kerr. There was even a guy.
Mark Kerr is one of the all-time greats.
Of course. And he was even a guy, I think he was in the first or second ADCC, I forget his name off the top of my head, but a South African guy. And he was like a powerlifter and a judo guy. And he went out and he won because people couldn't do anything to him. But it's like, you know, Nick Rodriguez went out there with literally just around about 12 months of formal grappling, you know, jiu-jitsu training, but his wrestling background, his athleticism, and his hustle,
and
confidence to the silver medal.
A lot of self-confidence.
Mark Kerr, his only loss was to Arona, so if he wins that match, we're talking about Mark Kerr as the only perfect person in ADCC history. He's one of the all-time greats.
He's
for
15
sure.
And 0, I want to say, right? I think
you know that other than Gordon Ryan, Mark Kerr is the only other American to have double golded ADCC.
Did not realize.
Yeah,
because Lister only won the absolute. Right?
Exactly. Yeah,
Drysdale only won the absolute.
There you go. But Gordon is the first American in nearly, like, I think, it's 18 years to win double gold.
Do you think they let him do the weight in absolute like he wants next time? Or
I hope
super,
so.
Super fight.
That'd be
but
sweet.
That could sort of mess up the super fight, right? If he wins everything, which he can't fight himself. But I would love. I want to see more Gordon. He's so exciting. I'd like to see him in the weight in the absolute next time.
Gordon Ryan fights himself. That would be something. Yeah.
The only challenge left.
Yeah,
no, I think the ADCC criteria is best exemplified in that Cyborg Nicky Rodriguez match. Because watching that through a jiu-jitsu lens, you might want to give that decision to Cyborg. He kind of hit that. Or didn't hit, but he
like
had,
the arm
had
bar
a nice
attempt?
Arm bar attempt. He had some good sweep attempts. Like, it was very close, but Nicky Rod was pressuring and lots of aggression from the top, and the top is all that matters.
Well,
in
he
ADCC.
Pulled. Cyborg pulled, and I saw more and more. Like, if you pull and play guard the whole time, I don't think it works in your favor if it goes to a ref's decision there.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we don't know exactly what the judges are looking for.
Well,
but
we have a good idea.
But it seemed like watching, it seems like if you pull guard, that's a big strike against you.
Paulo Tanquinho was another one that went to a ref's decision. A lot of people thought, oh, maybe Paulo won that one. A lot of people thought, but it's like, I think they value the top position. Tanquinho was on top, trying to pass.
Reed, you even mentioned it about how just hanging out with the officials and hanging out with the refs over the weekend and stuff, that they are wrestling fans and they want to see wrestling utilized in ADCC. It's important, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I know those guys are all huge wrestling fans. A lot of them are from that part of the world where wrestling is really, really big. And, of course, yeah, I think it started as – I feel like it always leaned a little bit more towards wrestling, really, even since 1998. You know, I feel like – and so I feel like these guys, they want to see that battle that Nicky Rod brings, and I think that's maybe why he won some of those closer matches, is because he was willing to kind of throw down in the realm that they were looking for.
Okay, so we mentioned there about sort of the standout stories: Nick Rodriguez, Tyro Tolo, Lachlan Giles. We mentioned about the some of our standout matches. We talked about Gordon, but one thing that we briefly touched on one or two moments, but again, let's go around the table, and Reed, we'll start off with you this time. We'll go the other
start
way.
Start with Michael. Come on.
I'll go. I'm ready.
Biggest upset of the weekend.
Did we do this one?
I talked about it in my match with Dante.
Yeah, exactly. We touched on it, but yeah. Biggest upset for you?
Biggest upset. Man, I guess it's got to be Kynan Bushesha.
That's where my mind went for sure.
Just because, I mean, really, when you look at it, paper, we shouldn't be so surprised, to be honest, right? I mean, it's
like...
But it's Bushesha.
Against anybody else, you would be like, oh, Kynan would be fine, but...
I forget who I talked to. I've talked to some... I think it was Gordon, maybe, or somebody. And he said, yeah, Nikki's probably going to have Bushesha. And he's like, well, I say that, but, you know, you can't count out Kynan ever. And it's so true. It's just like Kynan can win any match you put him in.
Man, you know what? Just from what you say right there, really hammers home a point to me that I think a lot of people kind of just maybe aren't aware of. Because they see the bravado, they see the talking crap online, and they see the swagger and the submissions. But one thing they don't realize is how astute and how dialed in Gordon is to this kind of stuff. That he was, I mean, he posted a little Instagram thing of him on Saturday night after competing, and like, you know, he's literally sat at his kitchen table in his rented house watching tape from earlier that day. He studies this stuff so closely, right? You know, we talked about how guys were going up against Lachlan Giles and had no idea what his game is. Gordon would never be unprepared like that, right? Yeah. And for him to kind of sort of be so aware of what could happen in the match between Bushesha and Kynan says a lot, I think, to his grappling IQ.
100%, man. What can you say about Gordon? Jeez, he was impressive that weekend.
Yeah.
He kind of gets buried because I feel like at a certain point we just expected him to win because he just looked so dominant.
He's a bit
there.
Of a victim of his own success, right? You sort of, Gordon should win this division, and he did. So
yeah. Kynan would have run too. Kynan beat 2-time ADCC champs in back-to-back matches there.
What do you think is the biggest upset?
Yeah, against Yuri and then against Bushesha.
Oh, yeah.
Those are two huge wins. And I have to say, if you kind of tally it all up, let's forget the submission against Lachlan Giles for a moment. You know, I know it's hard to, right? But let's forget that. But you look at Kynan's run through that division, submitting the European Trials winner in his first match, Eldar Rafagiev, beating Yuri 3-0 by a back take, beating Bushesha by a referee's decision, and then the win over Nick Rodriguez in the final.
Took his back.
Yeah. That, together, is an incredible performance.
His ADCC debut.
Nope.
Not his ADCC.
He competed 2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
But
easy to forget that one.
Yeah, yeah.
You tally it up, and that is the most successful competitive year that I've ever seen from a black belt of his age.
First year. You're talking about first year.
Well, no, he's not his first year. He just completed a first year.
Cause
he got his first year
black belt, though?
No, because he actually got his black belt at Worlds 2018. So he's around about 15 months.
I would call this his first year, though, because 2019 Gi season.
If you want to call it that.
I guess. Yeah. But in that time, since he won Worlds as a brown belt and got promoted in midway through last year, he's won, let me see, no Gi Worlds, Europeans, Pans, Worlds, Kasai Pro, ADCC. And let's not forget a bunch of like Grand Slams, World Pro, a bunch of Super Fights, Invitationals and stuff. Incredible, right?
Yeah. I sort of had a feeling like I picked Bucecha in my bracket, but after I saw Bucecha versus Bragonetto first round, like Bragonetto showed up in a t-shirt and shorts with zippers and we know he's older. And Bucecha like didn't look like he was too into it.
He got
like,
taken down twice, right?
I think he got taken down. He waited till the end and just sort of like rolled him from half guard. It was like, and then I saw the way Kynan was going. And even though I had picked Bucecha originally, you know, obviously, I started thinking like, man, Kynan's looking better. I thought Kynan could have get him. And yeah, what a great upset.
Well, Kynan's now taken out two of the GOATs this year.
Leandro Low
in the final at the World Championships and beating Bushesha here. Those are two huge names. Kynan was the youngest ADCC champion this year, 21 years old.
All right.
Youngest guy in the division as well.
That's incredible.
Biggest upset, Mike.
My upset? Let's think. I think a lot of the big upsets, Kynan, I mean, even Dante beating Lucas. Dante, we had ranked number 4 going into the week. I mean, Fionn beat Bia, but...
Don't list them all off, bro. Come on.
No, but I'm saying I don't want to pick them because they were all sort of big names going into it. Lachlan... Nobody had Lachlan ranked the top 10 at 77 kilograms even. To beat Kynan with a heel hook, forget about the other ones. To beat the 99-kilogram champ, tap him with a heel hook, I think that's the upset of the tournament for me.
Interesting. It's hard to argue with that, I think. For me, even though you just listed it and we talked about it briefly already, Fionn submitting Bia, I think is absolutely one of the biggest upsets of the tournament. Yeah. We all had sort of picked Bea as the dominant champion returning. She's beaten Fionn. She's beaten Bianca Basilio. It was Bea's to win, and Fionn to go out there and submit dramatically like that. You got to hand it to her. That's amazing. So, you know, it's kind of a shame that she ended up injured at the end of the tournament, but that's the way these things go.
I even said that to Fionn. I kind of caught up with her over by the podium, and, you know, she's kind of
your
happy,
brethren,
sad, right?
Your countrymen.
Yeah.
From Wales. There aren't too many of us, but there were two Welsh competitors at this year's ADCC. Ross Nichols in the 77-kilogram division and Fionn, all from Wales. Very, very small country of only 3 million people, so pretty cool to see. But I was chatting to Fionn, and I said, you know, she was happy, Tad, because, you know, happy to have, you know, beaten Beer and beaten a goat and made it to the silver medal. Obviously, very sad to have almost had her foot ripped off her leg. But I was chatting to her, and I said, hey, you know, I get it. You're upset with the loss, but nobody can take away the fact that you tapped Bea Mesquita. Now, I don't even remember the last time I saw Beatrice Mesquita get tapped out. I'm not sure if I've ever seen her get tapped out as a black belt. Literally. Like, you know, you have to go deep into the history books to try and find that. And Fionn will forever now be known as the girl who did that.
Well,
incredible.
I think that's something that
East
we should...
East Coast Jiu-Jitsu Academy.
I think that's something we should comment on about this event. Talking to these people the day before, everyone knows that... I think that's one of the reasons they're so excited. Everyone knows you don't even got to win this tournament.
Exactly.
One big win here makes you a superstar. Like,
exactly.
Look at Craig's career trajectory. It's the last one. He didn't win it. He took fourth. And everybody knows that going in. Like, Dante's talked about this before. Like, this could change my life if I do good. He goes out. He almost lost to Satava. Everything
right.
could be different. Satava was inches away from passing his guard for a minute. And then Dante comes, slams him, takes his back, and wins it. And then after that, gets the biggest win of his career against Lucas Lepre. Like, all this stuff. If Lachlan doesn't enter the absolute... Nobody's talking about Lachlan right now. He's a superstar now. This tournament, just going out, you don't have to win anything. Just a big win, an impressive performance can send you, you know, shooting a superstar.
Make or break your career, for sure.
Yeah. Can you imagine where Tyra Tolo is going to go from here?
Yeah.
For real. Like, the trajectory of his life is different now. Like,
I think the answer to that is back to high school.
Juvenile. Yeah. Juvenile blue belt divisions. Watch out, kids. He's coming for you. Oh,
so I got I think my biggest upset for the weekend, and it's not just one match, but it's one overall performance. I got to give a shout out to Tanquinho. Because going into the 66-kilogram division, it's something of a... You know, a kind of a backhanded compliment, I guess. But, you know, it's not unfair to say that nobody was talking about Tanquinho going into this, right? And with good reason. Number one, he was the oldest competitor in the division, 37 years of age.
Didn't medal last time.
Hadn't medaled last time.
66 is a young man's division.
Average age was 25 in that division. It was a young man's division, and he wasn't even... in the top four seeds, right? You were looking at the seeding, right? Where did you seed him at?
No, I had him top four.
You had him top four?
Based off of his 2015 medal, I believe.
Okay, right.
But I think it was like Pablo.
It was Paolo.
Tanquinho and Bruno were in the mix.
Well, Bruno took silver in 2015. Tanquinho took bronze, right?
Yeah, so they were both in the mix. But
so they weren't, like... Tanquinho was not a high seed. He was probably middle of the pack, kind of like 5-6, somewhere around there, right? So, you know, people...
Because Kennedy had the one, probably, or I don't know if they...
Paolo had the one.
Okay.
Yeah,
Paolo
had the
number
one.
Paolo Miao had the one. But regardless is that
Tanquinho was... Gianni would have been up there, too. Gianni would have been one of the top seeds.
So Tanquinho was just another guy. Just another guy in the mix, in a division stacked full of killers, active guys... And, you know, his most recent no-gi appearance was Kasai Pro last year when he took third in that tournament that Gianni won. Paolo took second. Now, that's not to say that we want to discount the fact that Tanquinho is an IBJJF world champion. Gian no-gi. It's not to discount the fact that he's hit the podium in ADCC in the past. But, big but, right, that... He wasn't necessarily...
Keep saying that. I keep chuckling. I'm sorry.
Big butt. He was not as active or as consistent as some of the other guys in this division. So, yeah, we kind of slept on him. One thing we did say...
Michael didn't sleep on him. Third seed.
One thing we did say, though, is that he definitely had the game, he had the style, and he had the experience to carry him through that division. And he showed it. And
nobody can sweep him.
Well, look at what he did. Number one, first round match... Tapped out Keith Gregorian. Number two, second round match, he beat Mateus Gabriel. Right now, the 2019 IBJJF world champion.
Out there, run that back tomorrow night in Dallas.
Semi-final match, beats Paolo Miao. And then in the final, beats Kennedy Maciel. And Kennedy did a great job of getting through to the final right there, because again, you know, he came in as like a replacement for his dad, but and he was on fire. He had some amazing matches, a couple of really, really good submissions. But you just look at that run right there. That is not an easy run by any chance. You know, some of these guys, like, you could argue that Gordon's path to the final was not the most, you know, the most difficult. But well, as far as the 66 go, that was incredible for Tanquinho.
It's wild, right? Tanquinho fighting Cobrinha's son in the final. Like,
yeah.
Tanquinho used to fight Cobrinha, right? Insane. In the adult divisions.
Yeah. I think the story for Tanquinho's run is, look at these guys. They can't wrestle with them. Guys want to pull against him, and then you sit down, then you need to wrestle to sweep. They can't sweep him.
Can't sweep him, and then he's going to
the overtime. I mean, yeah. I see these guys, Matheus Gabriel, Paulo, under these rules, having a tough time putting Tanquinho flat on his back. He's just scrappy like that.
Yeah, I got to say, that was one of the most composed and one of the most just smart performances from the entire weekend. You know, you never saw him out of position. You never saw him, you know, giving a leg up. You know, never saw him getting into you know, a position where the guy had a chance of scoring on him. He was just rock solid the entire time. Very impressive performance. And like you say, Mike, that Tanquinho is going to compete tomorrow night in Dallas on Fight to Win against Matheus Gabriel, who he beat in the second round match.
Warriors.
Ref decision,
there.
Right?
Warriors.
And you imagine going through that and competing next weekend?
Well,
I reached out to Seth from Fight to Win yesterday, and I was like, man, is Tanquinho definitely going to compete this weekend? And he just sent me a screenshot of something that Tanquinho posted on his Instagram. And he's like, listen, Tanquinho wrote, why am I competing? Because I gave my word. I gave my word that I was going to compete.
And
you know what?
Said to me.
There you go. Like, gold medal performance of the ADCC aside, he's like, I'm going to do it. Oh, 6 days later, I'm going to be there.
Savage.
So fucking
absolutely.
Incredible.
Warrior. Did you guys hear about this? That Nicky Rod and Pat Downey are going to be doing a wrestling match this weekend.
It's phenomenal, man.
Love it.
Yeah,
Can't wait to
see that.
So it is a pure wrestling match, right? There's some
altered rules.
Just take
altered
downs.
Rules, but there's no submissions.
So you can't leg lace
Nicky Rod. Nicky Rod might get in there.
There's one thing I know about Nicky Rod, man. When time's running, and he's on the mat with somebody.
The fight is happening.
he's going to be trying to choke somebody out.
It's just takedowns. You can't like leg lace and tech them or anything?
No, yeah. It's no parterre stuff. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So it's just takedown and up, basically. I wouldn't be surprised Nicky tries to slap on a couple chokes.
Well, he's got a size advantage working in his favor. He's a lot bigger than Downey.
He chokes Downey unconscious. Who's the winner?
Yeah.
Well, in wrestling rules, they just like restart, right? Yeah, they let the guy come around and they just keep going.
Downey just did Worlds at 86 kilograms, so Nick's going to have a big size advantage playing in his favor. Because, yeah, going up against Downey's a Team USA current world member.
Yeah.
And he won a couple matches at Worlds. He didn't go 0-1. So he's a very tough wrestler for him to go against.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great match. Love
Super
it.
Exciting.
These guys are you know, hot, and they you know, they struck while the iron was hot, man. This is awesome. Love it. Love to see it.
Were talking about Tanquinho's strategy going through. What about JT? JT just seems like the perfect strategist at ADCC, in my opinion. Like, he fights so smart. He's always got a game plan. He stays focused.
For me, that was the defining factor of JT. So he went up against a couple guys who are really, really tough to deal with. Gary Tonon, everybody knows that Gary's antics, you know, on the mat, right? But he's a very wily kind of competitor. He's very dangerous, but he also, he loves to be in the chaos of things, right?
Yeah.
And that's where he can score, and he does really well. And then you got a very different competitor in Wagner Hocha in the final.
Jabbing you in the chest.
Who's one of the most violent
competitors. Did you see the bruise on his forehead?
Oh, so crazy.
Gnarly. Yeah.
Wagner is just straight
ready.
Thugging it.
Both
right?
of those
he
guys.
He's just getting in people's faces.
Both of those guys pull people out of their game regularly.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
JT,
exactly.
You can't do that to him. He sticks to his game plan no matter what you do.
JT was, for me, the most composed and the most poised competitor of the entire tournament. Mentally unshakable, just so solid, so dialed in, so focused. And I mean, it just goes to show why he is now a two-time ADCC champion. And I said to him as well, you know, that hey, you gotta come back. Come back for the three-peat. You know why? Because number one, there has never been a three-time ADCC division champion from America. Like, Gordon's got three ADCC gold medals. Mark Kerr has three ADCC gold medals. But those are two weight divisions and an absolute. But nobody's come back and done back-to-back-to-back in the same division gold medals. And also, I believe, apart from Marcelo, nobody else has done, you know, in at least in recent years, nobody else has defended the 77.
He's the first person since Marcelo to defend it.
There you go.
Because that division is so tough. Like, we called it the group of death going into this.
Yeah.
JT goes through there and doesn't get scored on. And it is in control the entire time.
I feel like I think about Marcelo's four times winning ADCC as the division as like just like so unattainable now. But then you look at JT and it's like,
JT could do it.
JT could do it, dude.
He doesn't,
and the wrestling was the key, right? Yep. He out-wrestled DJ Jackson, put him on his back. He out-wrestled Gary Tonin. He out-wrestled Wagner. He out-wrestled every single
guy
that he faced.
His wrestling, too, is when you see when he's taking guys down, even if he's doing a single leg or anything, he's sort of double leg, body lock stuff, but he's switching to a body lock when it's going to the ground, because you can't just go to the ground with one leg, because you can't put them flat on their back like
they'll slip out. Yeah,
and guys are missing points like that. JT is switching to a body lock and pinning them flat on their back, and he's actually getting the points that guys are leaving behind out there.
Total competition time for JT Torres across those four matches was
the epitome.
60 minutes. 60 minutes of work, hard work.
15 minutes off.
That is a lot of time.
I think he did the same thing
in
2017. I did the championship study, and I think he might have hit like 75 minutes last time. So he puts in that work for sure.
His back take against Wagner was beautiful.
It was.
He went for the single. Wagner went Kimura trap, and he snuck behind him to take the back.
All right. So real quick about the Wagner JT. So you and I, all three of us, we were talking about this last night because we were going through the results and we were kind of tallying up the scores and stuff. And there's a little bit of a confusion as to what is recorded on the results for the Wagner JT final. And I made a point of reaching out and kind of finding out exactly what happened. So if you look at the arena, the official bracket, the result is recorded as a submission with 1 second left in the match. Now, if you watch the video, what happens is there's approximately 3 seconds left in the mat. Wagner knows that the time's running out. Wagner reaches up and behind, taps JT on the head and says, "Great job. Well done." And the referee stops it. And they were right on the edge of bounds anyway. He stops it. And you see the referee kind of say, "You tapped." And Wagner's like, "No, I didn't tap."
Like this, obviously.
Yeah,
exactly.
And even and I reach out to Wagner and I'm like, "Bro, it just looked like a seatbelt. There was no choke on. You didn't tap, right?" And he's like, "No." He said, "The referee said you tapped." And he said, even JT turned around and said, "He didn't tap." So even though the victory is recorded officially as a submission, I'm not counting it as a submission. You know?
Interesting.
JT and Wagner. Yeah, if JT and Wagner say there was no tap, and the referee said there was, well, I guess, you know, it's hard to argue with the officials, but there was no submission.
I checked BJJ Heroes. They agree with you. They have a 3-0 win.
Good. Yeah. Good, because I think it's unfair to Wagner to call that a submission win, right?
At the same time, though, I mean, I'm on the same side as all of us here, but Wagner should have tapped his head. Like, come on.
Like, don't tap
don't
him.
Don't risk it.
Twice as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. One tap or whatever.
Stop, right?
That's yeah.
Nice. Say nice job. Do anything.
You could have waited until 3 seconds and you would have been done, but I guess it's
force a submission when it's not there. So.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was kind of a harsh call on ref's part, but anyway, that's by the by. But
wow, what a tournament!
What a tournament! I just ran through some stats as well last night because I wanted to kind of go through some things. In total, 98 competitors, including the two in the super fight, of course. A total of 110 matches. Only three were forfeited, and those were the bronze medal matches in three divisions: the under 99, over 99, and the under 60. Under 60, Beatriz Mosqueda couldn't compete because of the injured arm. Cyborg, he decided that he did not want to compete in the bronze medal match against Buchecha.
A lot of people messaged me about that stuff this week.
And then Vinny was the same, right? Vinny.
What do you guys think about that?
Vinny decided not to compete against. Who was it in the under 99 third place?
Hulk
decided not to compete in the third place match, and apparently he got kind of mad because the commentators, I'm not sure who it was, but the commentators, I think it might have been Ricardo and Sean, they said that he was injured and he couldn't compete. And actually, he came out and he said no. He said, "I decided that I have enough bronze medals as it is. I only came out there to win gold, and therefore I didn't want to compete in the bronze medal match."
Yeah, should have went with being injured, in my opinion, because I think that sounds better.
Well. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that sounds like a cop-out. You didn't want a bronze medal, so you didn't want to compete? That's like saying, screw you guys, I'm taking my ball home because you guys aren't playing by the rules I want, I'm out.
That's something several athletes have DM'd me since the tournament, saying, are you guys going to talk about it? Like, people unhappy with sitting out a bronze medal match. I agree with them. I mean,
I'm sure you could have gotten you know, somebody else to fight for the bronze. I'm sure bronze medal certainly changed Lachlan Giles' life.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, I mean, there's no shame in an ADCC bronze medal. Well, you have to fight for it as well. It's not like a default participation.
Look at Paulo. Paulo had a tough ref's decision that a lot of people thought his way. He went out there and fought. He didn't say anything on social media. He went out there and he had the match afterwards. I just think to respect the tournament, you got to do it. Since I was a kid doing wrestling, you lose, okay, you're upset about it. You got to suck it up and go wrestle back. Go for bronze. I mean, it's just part of just any sport, really.
I feel like I should maybe it's a little harsh, but void the invite. Like, why would you get invited back if you're not going to respect the tournament?
No, that's a really good point, actually.
Yeah. I can't imagine too many people at the Olympics or something.
Oh, well, imagine Jordan Burroughs at Worlds. Jordan exactly. Burroughs, legend. Exactly. Jordan Burroughs, he came there looking for a gold medal.
Exactly.
He didn't want a bronze medal, but he loses. He goes back and he wrestles back for bronze. If Jordan Burroughs would have said, nah, I'm done, I just want a gold medal, what do you think the wrestling community would have reacted?
Exactly.
No, it would have been an uproar.
Yeah, exactly. It really would. And, you know, there were two guys who decided not to wrestle, right? It was both Vinny and Cyborg, and they're very different reasons. I mean, Cyborg was furious.
Sounds like they had similar reasons.
No, Vinny was saying he thought that he shouldn't have given up two against Retour, and he was upset about it.
Right. Yeah. But, okay, so it was they were both
problems
with
the Federation.
But yeah.
You're right. Go ahead.
Sorry. Right. Well, Cyborg was furious at the decision. He felt that under ADCC criteria that he should have deserved a division. And you did a great interview with him, Reed, as well, where he's talking about how he felt like his ADCC history, that, you know, he knew the rules and, you know, he went in there and he did what he thought was necessary and he was denied a decision. And it is what it is. That's, you know, subjective. It's somebody's opinion. You can't always, you know, claim. But Vinny straight up thought that there was officiating error and that he straight up got screwed because of the takedown points, right?
Yeah, there's a different argument. Yeah,
I guess they're slightly different arguments. Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know. I think it's hard to argue that it was a takedown if you go back and watch that match with Trektor, Vinny versus Trektor.
Yeah, I watched it this morning. Well, Vinny's saying that he was in on the leg for 3 seconds. And then pulled. But it's very close. Like, when I was trying to count
it's
in my head.
It's all continuous action, to me.
When I'm trying to count it in my head, it's so close that you cannot, I think, say the guy was 100% wrong. He's out there. He doesn't have a timer to tell him, you know, if he's just counting his head. And also, it looked like Trektor sort of had an underhook, sort of knee tap. So I could definitely see someone thinking that's a takedown. When I watched it live, I thought it was a takedown.
We got a good comment in the live chat as well here from, I think, a top fan, Will Safford.
Yes, he achieved that ranking.
But, you know, he makes a good point of saying that they actually robbed the fans of some potentially great fights as well. And I think that's a really good point, is that, you know, those were two bronze medal matches that could have been really, really good, right? Vinny versus Hulk would have been great.
Cyborg versus Buchecha. Yeah, I mean, go out there and give the fans what they want. They paid for the tickets. You know, everybody who's watching the stream at home. I mean, to just like you said, it's like I'm mad about the result. I'm taking my ball and I'm going home.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah. Well, it was a shame that it played out that way, and I really hope that, you know,
that
we get to see those matches. At some
yeah,
point.
You know, I everybody's got their own opinions on how those matches went and who should have won, you know, but I mean, I think it's just like they got to give it to somebody, you know, and somebody's gonna be mad, and it's unfortunate that if it went the other way, maybe some other people would have been mad that it went the other way, you know. But I just think that they got to give it to somebody, and
Well, it's all subjective too. Yeah, I mean, if it goes to a ref's decision, it's subjective.
Is there really this bias? Is there really a lot?
If it goes the other way, the other team's going to be upset about
exactly,
it. If they don't call that a takedown, Alliance is going to be upset about it. If they give the ref's decision to Cyborg, you know, the Henzo guys are going to say they should have thought Nick won.
I'm really impressed with the judges of ADCC, the refs of ADCC. I think they take their job very seriously.
Yes, they do.
They take their jobs. That's why they don't mingle too much with the athletes and stuff like that. They want to be as unbiased and as down the middle as they possibly can be.
Well, maybe a factor as well a factor as well is that people are so accustomed so unaccustomed to competing under ADCC rules because it's only every 2 years, even with all that experience. But ADCC rules are kind of very, very unique. They're very different to any other grappling
event. The rules literally change halfway through the match. It's great.
It really throws
people off. Yeah.
So maybe these guys, they think they know what ADCC rules are, but actually they don't.
Yeah, I think even Keenan weighed on this issue on his Instagram at one point. I was looking at his stories, and he said, like, the athletes, they move around, and they compete in different organizations, and they compete more than sometimes even in IBJJF events than IBJJF refs. But ADCC refs only ref ADCC. That's their bread and butter. That's the rule set. That's their expertise. And these athletes show up every 2 years. So on the error of or the argument of criteria, you might want to go with a guy that's all he knows.
Yeah, and it's true. That's all these guys do. They do. They travel to every trials. You know, in Asia, in Europe,
South America, Europe, everywhere.
You know, these guys. You're totally right. They nobody knows it better than those guys.
Something I think you can't complain about either if you're going to go to ADCC is the action going on in the concrete. You got to be ready until they stop you. You got to be ready because we saw there's no set place where they're going to stop it. They just make a judgment call. They're going to let it keep going if they think this is important. And
again, that's something unique to ADCC. You don't see any other grappling tournament where guys will roll out of bounds and they let you go. It's if a submission is still active, it's still in play.
Or even like a wrestling scramble. You don't really know.
Took the back. They were wrestling on the concrete and then kind of got the back of Yuri all the way out on the concrete.
I know. They took out my table in the process.
It is a bit insane. Don't get me wrong, but it's obvious.
It's ADCC.
It's known. It's well known.
Exactly. Kind of sticks no excuse for not knowing.
When Kind of set up his back take against Nick, he got the body lock to get behind him. They were on the concrete there too. So Kind of played that game well this week.
There you go. Yeah, that table, man. God, we must have had reinforced tables.
Yours was the worst one. Yeah. Hulk and Gaudio came crashing into you too.
I thought we were literally a WWE moment right there. Like they. But you know, it's funny that some guys as well, maybe they were prepared for it because they just jumped straight back up and were like, straight back in the middle, good to go. Where other guys, where other guys, you know, they did hit the table and they were like, it really threw them off mentally, physically, you know.
Hitting that concrete hard probably does that to you.
Although I did see Mateus Gabriel jump for a flying armbar.
On
the concrete and land straight on his back on the concrete and pop up like he just jumped on a trampoline and then run back to the center. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's saying actually here that Spriggs and Ali owe us a TV. That's correct. They did actually destroy
They broke the TV.
They did, yeah. Oh, wow. We had to switch it out midway through the match.
That was insane. So. You would have never guessed
I didn't even know those guys were on the same team.
Well, that's an interesting thing that they did for the first time at ADCC this year was they allowed two teammates to enter the absolute, whereas usually it's just one per team. And they did the same criteria where you had to come in and you had to meet second round if you had two teammates. You know, they had to face off. And we actually saw Gordon versus Gary, and we saw Spriggs versus Ali. And Spriggs versus Ali was one of the most entertaining matches of the tournament as well.
Yeah, it really
insane.
Was.
Yeah. They're going all over the place.
Yeah. I know those guys kill each other in training every day. If that's what their training looked like, can we just stream that 24/7, please? Because that was incredible.
Another thing that the rule set that brings it up is shout out to ADCC for setting it up where there cannot possibly be any closeouts. Mm. Making teammates fight early makes it such a better tournament. I mean, there's no secret. 100%. We all hate closeouts. I mean, they ruin events sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I know who the best is.
One big story that we didn't touch on as well that I think we have to mention is the fact that Gabby Garcia made history this weekend by becoming the first ever woman to win 4 ADCC gold medals, tying Marcelo Garcia's all-time record of most ADCC golds. That's incredible, right?
Yeah, they both did it. Weight class only, too. They both did it without being able to win 2 in 1 year.
And, right.
She said she's coming back to get 5. She most likely, I don't see anybody beating her. I think she's going to be the only 5-timer.
We didn't get to see Tayani versus
We didn't.
Gabby.
Tayani took bronze, right?
She lost to Karina Santi in the semi.
Santi.
Karina looked great. Karina beat Nacieli, I think, 8-0 in the first round and then beat Tayani.
That's no small thing, right?
Still huge. Like to see that Tayani versus Gabby.
Yeah, let's run that one on
a fight
to win.
That's the one match we were really hoping
to
see.
I wanted
to
see that
right?
forever. Gi or no Gi, I want to see that one.
It's definitely a tougher tournament than 2017 for Gabby, too. You know, her first two matches both went to 15-minute overtime.
I was surprised by that. The first one,
Stephanie Egger from Switzerland.
Stephanie Egger says that one
tough.
Surprised me. Yeah.
Very
that
tough.
Sick, like arm spin. Yeah. It almost threw her. That was sick. The crowd popped super big for that.
But Gabby definitely just dominated in that final. Got on top and hit the Khmer finish and,
against Karina. Karina was in a sling too. How many people did you see at the end of this tournament walk around with their arm in a sling or on crutches or like their faces peeling off?
Not
like a Terminator.
Giles.
Lachlan Giles is all smiles.
Lachlan Giles floated out of that arena.
Absolutely.
Oh my word. Well, guys, I think that's a great place to wrap it up. That was a fantastic tournament. There's so much good stuff to unpack from it. I'm sure we'll be talking about it still for weeks and months to come. There's so like the shockwaves are still reverberating through the world of grappling, and I think it's we're still going to be digesting this for a long time.
Can't wait for the next one, boys. Right?
2021's going to be wild.
Let's go.
2021.
I really hope you live up to that promise of making it even bigger than this one. That would be incredible. Guys, thanks very much for tuning in. It's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next week.